I think Tevez going to Juventus, what a coup that was for me. I mean,
on a head-to-head battle, Atletico Madrid can do more damage to Barcelona than the other way around.
Either he's really blind or he's fixing the match. I can't see it any other way.
I'm trying to get Sir Bob on my side here by saying City will win the Premier League.
It is an upset. You would expect Man United to go and win there.
Over $1 billion was paid in transfer fees between the clubs in Europe.
It's football. It's damn football. Like Ferguson said, football. Bloody marvellous.
Yeah, well, the celebration was, I can't believe I just scored against Mexico.
At one point, Parma, I think it's only like 224 players under contract.
Hey, they're going to throw me out of here, fellas. You're going to get me arrested on your show.
If you're a serious talent, you're going back and you're playing for Santos. You know, you're going back to play for, like in Argentina, for River Plate or Boca Juniors. Or you're going to Europe.
He looked like the Ryan Giggs of old. He was more creative than any player on the pitch. He made Mata look stupid. He made Rooney look silly.
Now, the Premier League is what the most exciting league out there. I think it's probably the best marketed league without a question.
When you look at the draw for the Champions League, you kind of say, well, all the pieces kind of fell into place for everybody except City.
I am your host, Joe Uccello.
Sir Bob, Mike Orr.
My co-host, Rob Rojas. My trusted co-host, Ben the Machine.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 210 of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network on this 2nd of July, 2018. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight I tend to think back to the famous words of Maximus Decimus Meridius of Gladiator fame, where he said, "Are you not entertained? Welcome to the 2018 World Cup." We have had everything since we last hit the airways a week ago. We've had thrilling finishes, big upsets, comebacks, penalties, VAR. Even yellow cards have come into play in this particular tournament. And we're going to discuss all of that tonight with our very special guests, founder of Sock Takes, Mr. Nipun Chopra, and South American journalist Robbie Blakely will both be joining me tonight. But first, before them, let's get my co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas. Rob, man, are you not entertained?
Oh, I mean, you know, you kind of have to worry about this specific World Cup because, you know, there have been crazier World Cups within the last, I would say, you know, 20, 30 years. But, you know, something that I've been seeing on Twitter recently is how drunk this World Cup has been. So, you know, Joe, I have to ask you, what is the blood alcohol level of this World Cup so far?
Oh, dude, it's off the charts. It is absolutely off the charts because if we're not drinking Caipirinha today, I don't, you know, it's been everywhere. It's been vodka on Saturday, right? I mean, it's been celebratory alcoholic beverage from here on out. But I guess if we're going to talk about blood alcohol levels, let's get one of our guests in here right away. The good doctor, founder of Sock Takes, Nipun Chopra. Nipun, welcome back to the show, man. How have you been?
It's absolutely great to be back on with you guys. It's been a couple of years, long time listener, second time guest. So I'm pretty happy to be back on. And as you guys have said so far, an incredible, incredible, exciting, unpredictable World Cup so far.
No doubt about it. So, man, I mean, it's been a while, although, you know, we've all messaged each other back and forth, you know, behind the scenes over the years. But, you know, you've taken some pretty big leaps. You're a regular on SiriusXM FC with Jason Davis on the United States of Soccer talking about D2 Tuesdays. You've got Sock Takes now, which you are the founder of, writer for. I mean, you've been doing some pretty big things since we last talked to you.
Well, there's somebody's got to cover the lower divisions, right? So it might as well be someone with no talent because it's the lower division. So here I am.
Well, hey, listen, as soon as they put promotion relegation in, I got a feeling you're going to move right up to the top. So so let's move south now to South America and a new guest on the show, South American journalist, Mr. Robbie Blakely. Robbie, welcome to the show. How are you tonight?
Hi, I'm very good. Thank you. Very, very pleased with the performance from Brazil today. And they're getting stronger and stronger with each game. They're gonna go into a big quarterfinal against Belgium on Friday, but they look more than prepared to take on the challenge. Oh, very, very happy.
I got a feeling we're gonna talk about Brazil a couple of ways tonight. You know, especially when you look at their matchup on Friday. definitely going to be a battle of two heavyweights there against Belgium. But we're going to hit that in a couple minutes. Let's jump right into the topics tonight, right? And Rob, I'm going to throw this one at you first. We saw, and just to kind of sew up some old business, on the last day of group stages, we saw Senegal lose 1-0 to Colombia. We saw Japan, we saw Senegal lose, that's correct, 1-0. We saw Poland also lose 1-0 to, Poland win 1-0 against Japan, leaving Senegal and Japan both tied in second place on points, goals scored, goals conceded, goal differential, and they also drew each other in their match, which led us to the last tiebreaker, yellow cards. And Senegal having, I believe it was 6 yellow cards over the 3 matches, and Japan only 4 yellow cards over the 3 matches, advanced Japan to their match today against Belgium, which we'll talk about in a moment. There's got to be a better way, Rob. I mean, I've heard of many different things, but yellow cards, I know that's the FIFA Fair Play Initiative, but, there's got to be a better way, man. What do you think?
I disagree. I disagree. I don't think there is a better way because, you know, and I'm looking at the order of how it all works when it comes to tiebreakers. Firstly, points obtained in all group matches, goal difference obtained in all group matches, number of goals scored in all group matches, points obtained in the matches played between the teams in question, goal difference in the matches played between the teams in question, number of goals scored in the matches played between the teams in question, and then the fair play points. But after that, and then I'm going to ask all our guests here, I mean, would you really want to see two teams get decided who gets eliminated and who gets advanced to the round of 16 by a draw, which is technically the last possible tiebreaker made by FIFA?
No, absolutely not. I agree with you, Rob. I think in this extreme set of circumstances, it simply had to be yellow cards because all other avenues were closed off. Right. Same number of points, same goal difference, same goal scored, identical records over the three games, and you have to find something to separate these two sides. Mm-hmm. And like you say, it wasn't the first option. It's not like, for example, they both had 5 points and then it was decided on yellow cards. Pretty much every other avenue was examined and closed off, and it came down to yellow cards. I think in this circumstances, it served its purpose.
Definitely. Well, Nipun, what do you think about this? I mean, because obviously, you know, you see, I guess, a lot of changes happening into the game. You know, I think goal line technology was the first big one. Then we have VAR. But, you know, something came curious of that day that Senegal got eliminated is thinking, you know, similar to, you know, what is seen in American sports, and the one sport would be hockey. But, you know, instead of playing just 30 minutes of extra time, you know, would you like to see it go into maybe a penalty shootout to decide it there like they do in the round of 16 and different other matches in the knockout stage? Or do you feel that avenue that they've been doing with the fair play points is still the right way to decide a tiebreaker?
No, I'm on board with both of what you guys have said and what you and Robbie have kind of come to a conclusion on. I think it's a fair way to settle what, as Robbie said, is a very strange permutation of events. Because so I posted this very similar question on Twitter, and I got some interesting responses. Some people suggested there could be a playoff, like you suggested, Rob. But the truth is, if you have this situation where Senegal and Japan are playing in two cities 200 miles away from each other, how do you have a playoff in any way? You'd have to set aside a new date. That's a logistical nightmare. The second option, suggestion I was given was shots on goal. And the third option I was given was expected goals as a metric. And I'll take those both of them together. The great thing about yellow cards, red cards, the fair play rule, is that anybody can look that up very quickly, and there's no question as to whether it's accurate or not. This player X, either he got a yellow card or he didn't. He got a red card or he didn't. If you bring into the options of things like shots or expected goals, there is a level of subjectivity that exists, and I think it would really turn people away. Because I'll end on this, a really amazing guest that you guys have had on before many times, Tim Vickery, often talks about how those kinds of statistics, shots on goals, passes completed, and expected goals is another level altogether, are not completely accurate and reflective of what's happening on the pitch. So I'm totally okay with the cards being a tiebreaker in this situation.
No, absolutely. I mean, Joe, I mean, there are a lot of avenues to go on this, but what do you think of all this?
I'm going to be the naysayer. I'm going to actually disagree with all of you. And this is my reason. The problem with yellow cards is that they are subjective. They're the eye of the beholder, in terms of the run of play over the three matches. So if you've got a referee, we saw a referee, refresh my memory, it was yesterday's second match, which was, I'm losing my train of
thought. Croatia-Denmark.
Thank you, Croatia-Denmark. I believe there was one yellow card handed out in the entire match, and it was handed out at the end. And the referee is notorious for not handing out yellow cards. So you get into if a referee is more prone to give a yellow card or a red card, whether he's not prone to give a yellow card or a red card. And what did the referee see? Maybe a foul that we saw, you know, a player commit where he handed a yellow card out was rather harsh. So I think it leaves a lot into the subjectivity of the referee of the matches that those teams played to determine those yellow cards. I kind of like the shots on goal one. But I do like a combination because anyone can just kick a ball at a net and have it be non-threatening. I'd like to actually see it as a combination of shots on goal and saves made by the keeper. So you know, for instance, you know, Senegal's keeper made 10 saves over the tournament and their team took 22 shots. That's a total combined total of 32 events, let's call them. And then if Japan had 31 events, then you could say that, you know, maybe Japan was less aggressive offensively, or maybe they were better, you know, defensively, or their keeper was better, which kept them in the games. I think it's an easier statistic to point to.
But then that would then favor the bigger teams. Right. That would then favor the stronger teams, because the stronger teams are going to play more offensive football. They're going to play more open football. A team that doesn't have the same technical quality as the bigger sides is going to try and close down a game. They're going to be defending. They're going to be on the back foot and hitting on the counter. They're not going to create those same kind of chances. It's a different art form. Defending is almost neglected art form in football, but it shouldn't be forgotten. And you start using shots on goal, shots on target, expected goals ratios as some sort of measure of success. It's an automatic advantage to a bigger, stronger side with superior technical quality.
Okay. So from that standpoint, I mean, looking at it that way, and I'm not disagreeing with you. You know, what could be the best way to break my, I mean, is yellow cards the best way, do you guys think, or is there something else we should be pointing to, maybe a combination of things even, that would come into play that might help? And again, let's keep in mind, we're talking about the sixth tiebreaker. So to get to this point, it's quite the distance, but it seems unfair. I also agree the penalty shootout, Napoon, like you said, the logistics of getting these two teams together, or even you put them back on their own separate pitches against the matches they were playing against the teams they were playing against, and have them take penalties where on one side Senegal is shooting against the Colombian goalkeeper David Ospina, and Japan is shooting against Wojciech Szczęsny. Now you get into the point of, you know, what if that was Alisson Becker on one side and the backup goalkeeper, or even a guy like Willy Caballero, okay, who had an awful tournament for Argentina. You could see one of the best goalkeepers in the world on one end and the worst goalkeeper in the tournament on the other end, just by the way it plays out. So I don't agree with, you know, remote penalty kicks. I don't think that's a good way to do it. But I don't know. It just seems so uncompetitive to me to go to yellow cards on this one. And that's why...
But why is it uncompetitive? I mean, the sport of soccer has many, many components to it. Obviously, there's attacking football. There's... You know, there's defending, as Rob pointed out, that's incredibly important. There's the passion. There's all of these components. And why shouldn't fair play be a component of that? Especially when we're not talking about deciding a championship based on this. We're talking about a very late stage game, very late stage tiebreaker. Mm-hmm. When going through the algorithm, you have six stages above it. And finally, you get to this one, which as Robbie mentioned, is one above the you know, drawing a you know, a coin toss, pretty much.
Yeah,
so
basically.
I don't see why this shouldn't be a component of a tiebreaker. Mm-hmm. And I'll add one more thing here.
Yeah.
I think we should also consider the fact that these players themselves are going through all of these emotions, all of these things at the same time. Mm-hmm. So I think it is fair to have a team that is in more control of their emotions, that gets less yellow cards, red cards, to have an advantage over a team that, you know, went crazy. Your point, by the way, Joe, is one I hadn't thought of, which is that there is differences in referees, their propensity to hand out yellow cards, etc. And that's very true. But this is an average over three games. It's not just based on one game. So I really do think it's a good tiebreaker.
Okay. No, I don't mind being in the minority here, because I felt like there should be another solution to the problem. I don't know what that solution is. And I don't like putting decisions in the referee's hands, but also, you know, even looking at it from that perspective, a lot of times it's the players that have put themselves in that position. We see that time and time again where a player, you know, commits a stupid penalty or stupid foul on a player running away from the goal with the ball, and he gets tripped in the box, and now it's a penalty kick when it's really a poor decision on the defender to trip that person as he's moving away from the goal. So, you know, you force the referee to make a decision in that type of scenario, and I guess over the long run of three matches, you're forcing the referee to make decisions that ultimately could affect your ability to advance in the tournament, I guess is the way I should look at the penalty kick. I'm sorry, the yellow card and the FIFA fair play points. So I just, you know, it's an interesting topic because it's finally come up for the first time in a World Cup. And I thought it was something that would be interesting to at least open the show with, and I guess it was. Let's talk about something else that I know we've hashed out here before. And another one that's determining winners is the choice of using penalty kicks at the end of extra time. I am glad to see that they added a fourth sub into the added 30 minutes of play. But Robbie, I'm going to throw this one at you first. Are you a fan of penalty kicks to decide the what team moves on? Do you feel that maybe they? As for me, my view on this has been always let them play. Let them play another 30 minutes. Add one more sub. Let them play another 30 minutes. Add more sub. Add another sub and make it a war of attrition. So, are you happy with penalties to decide this, or do you think they should continue to play?
No, I am happy with penalties. I think certainly as neutrals watching the pressure situation that is a penalty shootout is hugely entertaining. It's hugely exciting. It draws people in. On the other side, it tests the psychological capabilities of a team, of a player. Taking a penalty in a World Cup penalty shootout is a huge psychological examination of the player. Not everyone is up to it. I mean, we saw the Russia and Spain game. Russia basically closed down and took a calculated gamble that they could take Spain to penalties, and they did. Spain, I think, made 1,200 passes in the game, 1,029 passes in the game, something like that. It's the most passes in the history of a World Cup game since records began. But they came to penalties, and they didn't have the emotional fortitude to break Russia. I think I read today that Koke, who took one of the penalties and missed, Diego Costa was questioning whether he was in the right frame of mind to take that penalty. Moving on to your second point about playing an extra half an hour, extra half hour, extra half hour. A World Cup is incredibly intense anyway. You're playing a maximum of seven games in a month, so roughly every 3 or 4 days. It's physically and mentally exhausting. And adding an extra half an hour, an extra half an hour, an extra half an hour until someone scores is, I think it's just far too demanding for any group of players in that time period of 4 weeks or 30 days.
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm just hearing here by one of the reports here on Twitter. I'm just going to break off from the World Cup discussion. Obviously, this is taking out of what we've been talking about, but we do have some breaking news coming from Twitter. This is from Tancredi Palmeri. Obviously, you know, each of us have a decision and an opinion on him, but I'm hearing right now that Juventus have offered 30 million euros after taxes per year to give Cristiano Ronaldo a move to Turin and 120 million to Real Madrid, according to Marca, one of the biggest newspapers in all of the world, and especially in Spain. So, I mean, I'll go this to Joe real quick, obviously being a Juventino, and, you know, we're just going to sidetrack here a little bit and talk about that, but certainly a big move, nevertheless, for a team like Juventus to get one of the best players in the world, and you know, and a player who, you know, and I'm sure we're going to mention about this, you know, had a decent tournament. Obviously, didn't do much in the game against Uruguay when it all mattered, but you know, it's certainly a really good move, and it's something that Juventus need to do to get that step forward.
You know, and Napoon, I don't want you to think that we're neglecting you. I definitely want to to get your thing on penalties, but for me, I mean, this is one of those moves, and again, we'll wait to see what happens. Tancredi is usually, I would say, about 70-30 in terms of accuracy, right? And this is going off of an initial report from Tuttosport, who is probably 20% accurate when it comes to these things. But at the same time, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo kind of hinted that he was leaving Real Madrid after the Champions League final. But this is, for me, it's from the Juventus point of view, this is not a normal move that they would make. This is something that is out of the ordinary. They, if you remember correctly, they sold, and I want to say it was Arturo Vidal to bring on Gonzalo Higuain when they spent all that money. There, you know, there have been, for Juventus, what they do is they make a big move to make a big move. So they make a big sale. And they basically level the books is what it comes down to. And I know they get into the whole, you know, we don't want a player to be here. But I know a lot of the Juventino fans, you know, even myself included, are kind of fed up with that whole idea of, oh, if you don't want to be here, we don't want you here, and then we'll sell you. You've got to eventually say, listen, you've got to make a player want to be here. And this is the kind of thing, this is the kind of move that if Cristiano Ronaldo is truly going to Juventus, it's a move where Paulo Dybala says, yeah, I want to stay because I get to play with him. You know, where Gonzalo Higuain says, I want to stay, I want to play with him. You know, even a guy who was a huge piece of their puzzle last year, Mario Mandzukic, and Douglas Costa, who they finalized, and they outright purchased him from Bayern before the World Cup. These are guys now that they're going to look at this move and say, we're really moving forward. We're really pushing. And you know, Juve's picked up Joao Cancelo. They've picked up Mattia Perin as a backup to Wojciech Szczesny, who is an incredible backup. You know, they've made a couple of moves, and I don't know that they have the cash to do this kind of these kind of numbers without selling a big piece. But I think that it would be a huge thing for Juventus, and it would point to the fact that they really want to go for that Champions League title, and this is a guy that that gives you that idea or that mentality for sure, because this is a guy that's won it three times in a row now. So, Nipun, I don't know if you want to react on that, if we want to go back to the penalties, but I'm going to give you the mic for a minute and let you decide whichever way you want to go, you know, penalties or keep on playing or Cristiano Ronaldo.
Well, I always have an opinion on Cristiano as a lifelong Man United supporter. I don't think 100 and you said 120, right, Rob?
Yes, 120. Yes,
yeah,
120.
I don't think 120 million, even at 32, I think, is how old Cristiano is.
33.
Yeah, I don't think 120 million is going to make Real Madrid want to sell him. Real Madrid is going through a huge turnover now with Zidane having departed. I don't think they want to sell Cristiano. And if they do sell Cristiano, I'm sure it'll be... I don't think Cristiano himself will allow himself to be sold for less than 222 million, which is what, you know, PSG paid Barcelona for Neymar, because that's how big Cristiano's ego is. So I don't believe this report, to be perfectly honest, and I don't see him going to Juventus this year. The penalties, look, I think there's some merit to the idea that teams should keep playing on, but you really are looking for injuries in that situation. Even if you're adding a sub every 15 minutes as opposed to 30 minutes, which is what some people have suggested. I think FIFPro talked about that at some point. And I also think, coming back to a point that Rob made earlier, it, again, benefits the bigger teams, because the bigger teams are the ones, you know, Belgium can bring on the greatest player of all time in Marouane Fellaini off the bench. they can bring on, you know, players of that ilk. However, a team like Japan could never bring someone off the bench that had anywhere near that quality. So again, I think it benefits the bigger teams in that situation very, very significantly. Whereas a penalty shootout truly is, while heartbreaking for the team that loses and sometimes unfair, it truly is an exciting spectacle and gives the smaller teams a chance.
I do love the slick little Manchester United is the greatest in the world drop there with Marouane Fellaini. I do admire that. Robbie, I want to pose the same information to you, both the Cristiano Ronaldo and the penalties, and get kind of your thoughts on both.
Yeah, the penalties. Yes, as I said, are you talking to me? Sorry, or Rob?
Yes. I'm going to go to Rob as Roberto from now on. I didn't think about that until right. Just now. Yeah. So yeah, it's Robbie, to you.
Right, okay. Yeah. Well, the penalties. Just as I said before, I think the penalties are and for neutrals and for fans, it's entertaining and it's exciting to watch. I think the energy levels to play an extra half an hour, an extra 15 minutes, is just inviting injury, and it does. It gives an unfair advantage to bigger sides who have deeper squads. The Ronaldo story, it's not a link that I had heard before, admittedly. Yeah, I suppose it could be interesting. I mean, he's made history at Real Madrid. He's won three Champions League titles in a row. Possibly thinks it's as good as it's going to get. At Madrid, Zidane's left, a new coach has come in, has probably got new ideas, new ideas about how he wants the team to play, how he's going to shape that side. Has his own ideas about what playing staff he wants to bring in and who he wants to move out. So with those three Champions League titles in the bag and Zidane moving on, maybe Ronaldo thinks it's time for him to look to pastures new as well.
Possibly. Let's keep the superstar discussion going, because obviously I want to talk about Neymar, as I had mentioned to you guys earlier. And I want to talk, let's start as a generalized question with his antics overall in the World Cup, the rolling around. You've seen the memes, made for him about him withering in pain, like, you know, somebody from the grassy knoll shot him, and we're trying to figure out who. It's been quite, at times, ridiculous in terms of his rolling around, but he's also the most fouled player in this tournament so far. So, Roberto, I want to go to you first on this one. You know, in terms of his antics or in terms of his reactions to being fouled, is it necessary, or do you think that maybe if he stopped doing that and maybe just went down when he was fouled instead of the rolling around and the withering in pain, that maybe he would actually be more apt to get more calls because it looks a lot more legit in the referee's eyes?
Well, I mean, and obviously, you know, Robbie's going to really help me on this one being in Brazil. I mean, obviously, you know, we kind of know what Neymar has been doing. You know, we've seen what kind of antics that he is. You know, obviously being the 5'9" and the stature that he is, obviously he doesn't have the strength that we would expect a player like Neymar. And, you know, he is a talented player. Nevertheless, he's always been demonstrated that. The one thing that I've always had the bad thing about him is just the way that he just goes down and you know, just showboats. I mean, yes, he is Brazilian. He does have that characteristics of trying to show off with flair, and that makes sense. And believe me, I've been a fan of that since he's been doing that in his Santos days. But, you know, after a while, you know, it kind of hurts the team. And I think I saw that. I think it was the game against Switzerland, you know, where he was just, you know, too much showboating, obviously, down to the ground. As you mentioned, you know, one of the most fouled players in the World Cup so far. But it's interesting because, you know, this is a player that obviously is, you know, for lack of a better word, dramatic. He's emotional. But I won't go and say that he is an embarrassment. And I'm just hearing some stupid stuff on Twitter and all of social media thinking about, oh, he's an actor, or everything this is fake. I mean, listen, I mean, this is a guy who, you know, for all intents and purposes, he's not even 100% fit. You know, he's not 100% fit at this World Cup so far. He's coming back from injury and he's playing through it, and he's still at around, I would say, 85-90%. So he's not exactly at 100%. And the way that he's doing all of this right now is just embarrassing, that people are going to downplay a really important player like he is. Obviously, you know, give or take or what you think about him, he's a talented player. Obviously, I think the third best player in the world right now before after Messi and Ronaldo. And that's how it's going to be. He's one of the more important players on this Brazil team in a team full of stars. And, you know, it's ridiculous that this guy gets criticism time and time again just because of the way that he plays. I mean, it's a style. It's not going to change. We obviously saw that for many, many years. And it's just, you know, we have to, you know, face it. We're going to have to, like, accept it. I mean, you know, Napoon, I'll go to you first on this one. I mean, what is your take on Neymar, not just as the player in general, but what you've been seeing so far at this World Cup and the criticism that he's been getting so far in Russia?
Yeah, it's a bit of a mixed bag. I think you hit the nail on the head with the fact that some of the reaction to it has been overdone and overblown, and some of the stuff some of the things people are saying about Neymar is absurd, given he's not really even the worst of the worst when it comes to stuff like this. Yes, mm-hmm. It can get annoying, but he's not elbowing people in the face. He's not biting people in the ear or the neck, right? So, yes, it's a bit annoying, but it's not that big of a deal. Look, the Brazilian team has always had characters, right? You think of Romario, you think of Ronaldinho. I mean, you think back to Socrates and Garrincha, right? Pelé, all these. They've always been some great players on Brazilian teams who are topics of conversation in the World Cup. One, because the Brazilian national team is fantastic. Two, because these players tend to be fantastic. And as a journalistic community, it's always one of those things where the old adage goes, right? You build people up to tear them down. You can't you can't knock Neymar for drinking after games. You can't knock him for smoking after games. You can't knock him for a crazy party lifestyle during, well, sometimes, but not most of the time. So you find something to knock him down on. In this case, it's diving. With Cristiano Ronaldo, it's diving. With another player, it's something else. So the truth of the matter is there's always going to be some area for journalists and fans to focus on. And in the case of Neymar, it happens to be occasional, admitted, but occasional embellishment of tackles. And it's all a little overblown.
No, absolutely. And Robbie, I mean, you're in Brazil. You obviously have a bigger aspect on this. And, you know, this is a talented player. Nevertheless, I mean, he's already the third top goal scorer for the Brazilian national team. He, you know, he's within 6 goals of surpassing Ronaldo as the second best. And I'm pretty sure that if he goes on this great form until the end of the career, he will surpass Pele as the top goal scorer. You know, and really, he's been talented, and we've seen the consistency that he gives, you know, for the last 4 years, I want to say. I mean, what are your thoughts on this, you know, type of criticism that, you know, the Brazilian public has been giving and you know, and of course, obviously, to an international audience?
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna come out with a fairly controversial opinion. It's certainly controversial here in Brazil. That I love Neymar. I love Neymar. He's by far the best player on this Brazil team, possibly the best player at the World Cup in terms of technical talent. Now that Messi and Ronaldo have left, he's not. It's not that he's carrying this Brazil team, but he's looked to as a leader on the pitch, certainly in the final third when they're looking to break teams down, when they're looking for goals. As you said, there he's the third highest scorer for Brazil already. He's only 26 years old, and he has 57 goals for Brazil. Okay. Second on that list is Ronaldo, who's got 62. Okay. So Neymar's only 5 goals behind him, and you've still got the quarterfinal, the semifinal, and the final to go. So assuming Brazil play those 3 games, it's perfectly feasible that he could score 5 goals in those 3 games. He's got the capability to do that. So he could be level with Ronaldo by the end of this World Cup. At just the age of 26, and the amount of vitriol and criticism and anger you see directed at Neymar, certainly from the Brazilian public, I find baffling. There's no logic to it whatsoever. He's the biggest hope this side has, and he was fantastic today. He was very him and William were by far the best players. He tops it off with a goal, so he's now on 2. He's getting better and better with every game. He didn't look fully fit in the game against Switzerland. I agree. There were a lot of theatrics against Costa Rica. I for one thought it was a penalty at the end. It's not a particularly popular opinion. He did make a meal of it, but the defender did put his arm in front of Neymar when he was in a goal scoring position and impeded him from taking a shot at goal. So I personally think it was a penalty. He then played very well in the final game against Serbia. He kept a calm head. Cheech has spoken to him on at least 2 occasions about keeping his cool, about not rising to the provocation. And again, he didn't today. When the Mexican Loyan trod on him off the pitch, yeah, he did roll around slightly, but he didn't react. He didn't put himself in a situation where he could have got sent off, as he did at the Copa America in 2015, and put in another excellent, mature performance. He's growing with each game, and he's a real, real weapon for this Brazil side.
Yeah, and Joe, I mean, obviously, you know, this is a player that's just getting better and better. Obviously, you know, that was the kind of the criticism that he got early in his age of, you know, how can he could be a bit more dramatic, you know, a bit fiery, so to say, you know, trying to get himself sent off, basically, as we saw in the Copa America or in other occasions, you know, that kind of attitude. But he's certainly matured into such a wonderful player. And I mean, you know, with all the talk about Messi and Ronaldo, you know, that whole debate dying down of the best player in the world, you know, we got players like Mbappe coming up after his performance against Argentina, and obviously Neymar, who's, you know, at the prime of his career. I mean, this guy is clearly the favorite to be the next best player in the world. I mean, he's got everything right in front of him.
Yeah, he's entering the prime of his career, and I think that if Brazil do go on and win this World Cup, I think he will really start to stick his name in that discussion. You have to wonder if they do win the World Cup, if he starts to be mentioned for the Ballon d'Or at the end of the year. I mean, many want to give it to Cristiano Ronaldo for his play in Champions League, but I think there's a distinct possibility, just like we talked with Mohamed Salah and his performance in England this year. You know, if he backed it up with a great World Cup performance, which he didn't, but if he did, that there was discussion that maybe Salah was going to be the one to break that Messi-Ronaldo grasp on that particular trophy. I think this is the kind of thing that would elevate Neymar. Many think of him as not Messi-Ronaldo, you know, just a skosh below, and I think this is the kind of thing that where if he leads this team and plays the way he's played, like Robbie, like you had said, that, you know, he's had a very good tournament. I think that he could elevate himself into that discussion. I think he will be the next one. And we talk about Kylian Mbappe and the great tournament he's had. You know, we've got some other young talent all around. Even Paul Pogba, we saw him against Argentina on Saturday, and I thought Paul Pogba had a fantastic match, and he's really starting to grow into the tournament. Many are, you know, Nipun, you'll be able to speak to this one, being the Man U guy, that he was kind of, I guess, substandard from what you expected of him coming from Juventus. But he's another one that they talked about, this, you know, Ballon d'Or level player. I think it's really Neymar's to take at this point. And now that he's got Brazil in the quarterfinals without any of those other big star names there to be there with him, I think he can really put his stamp on the tournament. Now, I do want to look at one other thing with Neymar today, and I know I'm assuming we all saw the match and we all saw the replay of this, and it was the Miguel Layún alleged, for lack of a better term, stomp on his ankle in the 70th minute where he started to roll around in pain. And a lot of people were talking about, this is another one where they point to him like, oh, why is he rolling around? He's being a big baby. I've watched the replay, I'd say about 8 times now, and about 3 or 4 times at normal speed and a couple in the slow motion replays that I've seen. I don't understand. I can't understand yet, and I want to throw this one back at you, Roberto. I can't understand how Miguel Layún did not get a red card for that. You could see he steps on the ground and then shuffles his feet, and when he shuffled his foot, it's that shuffle that brought his foot not only on Neymar's ankle and his surgically repaired foot, but also on the official's foot. I don't know if you see that, but even the official got stepped on in that quote unquote stomp. But to me, it looks very, very purposeful. It is one of those, like, if I wanted to play dirty and I didn't like the way a player was playing, that's the kind of thing I would do. I would you know, stick my cleats into him and say, hey, I'm still here, pal. You know, I think it's dirty. I think it's inappropriate. He was off the pitch, and I think it was unnecessary. And at that point, I'm surprised how he didn't get a red card. I mean, your reaction to it, Rob?
I'm surprised he didn't get a card, period. I mean, that's the big one for me. Yes, it was for intention, and you kind of saw that. And, you know, and Robbie, I'll pose this to you as well. You know, certainly, and I think the best thing about this, you know, obviously this was something that could have been really bad for Brazil. But, and you mentioned it, you know, it's the fact that he kept this cool, you know, and not trying to, you know, get sent off or get a yellow card that could have suspended him for the next game. But I do want to talk about, and just moving a bit more of a discussion on this game, I mean, you know, heading into the next game against Belgium, obviously it's going to be a huge, huge task, and I think probably the hardest game Brazil will have at this World Cup. You know, they won't be without Casemiro. I mean, you would expect a player like Fernandinho playing in that center midfield with Paulinho and so on. So I just want your thoughts on that, and, you know, how big of a loss is this for Casemiro? How big of a loss for Brazil is this for heading into this game against Belgium?
Yeah, I mean, Casemiro has made that holding midfield role his own, and he's looked very tidy, very solid, and very dependable in that position. Having said that, I don't think it's a huge loss for Brazil, because Fernandinho is more than competent in performing that role. He's also a slightly more creative player, and Casemiro will get the ball, and he is capable of defence splitting passes. But I think Fernandinho will look up, he'll drive forward with the ball, and he'll look to create those spaces for Coutinho, for Neymar, for Willian. I'm expecting a very open game, because Belgium, are going to look to get on the front foot as well. Their coach, Roberto Martinez, he likes to play football a certain way as well. He's very much likes to take the initiative, likes to impose a tempo, and likes to play going forward. So I think we're going to see a far more open game. I think that actually will play into Brazil's hands. They're not always the most convincing against sides that are going to sit back with two lines of four and challenge you to break them down. When they find space, the likes of Willian, the likes of Coutinho are capable of exploiting it. And I think this is where we're going to see Gabriel Jesus at his best. He's been fairly quiet in the tournament so far. He's yet to score a goal, of course. But I think in these kind of games, when both teams are looking to take the initiative, Jesus is going to thrive.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's actually funny you mentioned Jesus, because that's going to be my next question heading into to Nippon. You know, obviously Jesus has had a quiet World Cup, you know, no goals yet. The one player, basically his understudy so far on this Brazil team, is Firmino. You know, he came on in the 86th minute and within 2 minutes scored his goal to give that victory for Brazil against Mexico. I mean, you know, I think what we've been hearing in the Brazilian media is how, and I guess from the fans, how much they want Firmino to start rather than Jesus, just because based on form and the way that he's been able to, you know, to decide a game. I mean, would you really think about that and put Firmino as that starting striker? And, you know, heading into this big game against Belgium, obviously, you know, you would think that Brazil have the upper hand, but, you know, Belgium can come here and, you know, with the quality that they have and certainly, you know, with the performance that they did against Japan, can really snatch a victory in this one. I mean, Nipun, what do you think about this matchup in the quarterfinals?
I'm really excited about this matchup. To answer your first question, I think he should continue with Gabriel Jesus over Bobby Firmino. Look, with Firmino, he's had a great season with Liverpool. Obviously, Salah's got all the headlines, but Firmino has been as important to that Liverpool success, or, well, I should say lack thereof, rather happily, as you might fancy for it. But that brilliant season they had was, you know, Firmino had a big part to play in that. So when we came into the World Cup, a lot of people automatically assumed that Firmino would basically play the same role. You would be switching Neymar instead of Salah, and now you have Coutinho as support, a partnership that has long been successful for Liverpool before Coutinho moved to Barcelona. But I think, even though we haven't seen the goal threat that we expect from a player of that ilk, you know, playing at Man City, a player that has tons of promise, I think he's done enough to hold down that starting role. I think he does start against Belgium, and I think one player that Brazil, I don't know what the injury report is now, but will miss significantly is Marcelo. Because if you watch the game today, with the three at the back that Belgium plays, the width, the wing positions were really being exploited by Japan. And that is the sort of position that Marcelo excels at for Brazil.
Marcelo is expected to be back for this game.
He is supposed to be fit? Okay, yeah. Excellent. So I think that's a huge, huge asset to have Marcelo in this game, because I think he would split open that right side of the Belgium backline, which really I thought was exposed a lot today. And my final thought on this is, this is going to be a fantastic match. I slightly disagree with Robbie. I think missing Fernandinho is a blessing in this game, because Casemiro will hold his defensive position better. And when you have players like Kevin De Bruyne playing in the opposition side, you want to make sure you have a player that focuses on his defensive attributes a little bit better. So I really do think Casemiro starting rather fortunately for in his situation is actually a good thing for Brazil in the next game.
No, absolutely. And Joe, I mean, obviously this is a really good game, and you know, I think when you're looking at the other quarterfinal with between Uruguay and France, I mean, this is certainly the makings of a really important clash in the semifinals. You know, I mean, you know, I think this will be Brazil's toughest game in this World Cup, regardless of who they play, if it's Uruguay or France. I mean, what do you think about that, Joe?
Yeah, it's tough to say. The thing is that if we, you know, if we look ahead, let's say Brazil do get past Belgium, which is not any given by any stretch of the imagination, you're facing a French team that is really getting better and better, and I think got confident off of beating a Lionel Messi Argentina side that actually came back on them. So I think there's a lot of confidence coming out of this French side. Confidence in a young, talented squad, I think, is a very difficult thing to manage. When you look across the pitch to Uruguay, this is a team that is the best defensive team in this tournament. I don't think anyone can argue it. They've not conceded a goal. They conceded one goal so far in the tournament. The only other team to concede only one goal in this tournament, Brazil. They're the only other ones to do it so far that are still alive in this tournament. So, and we know about Jimenez, we know about Godin, we know about how tough they are. We talk about wing play, like you were talking about, Nipun. The ability for guys like Casillas to get up and down the pitch, we've seen him do that a few times in this tournament. So I don't think any of the other two teams on the other side of the bracket are an easy out for Brazil, and I think
it would be foolish of them to go and start to look down the bracket. I think right now Belgium is going to be such a huge challenge because it's a midfield that is of the highest quality in there, especially when you bring in someone like Kevin De Bruyne, who can really pull the strings. We've seen him do it for club and country. You've got Eden Hazard up there playing very, very well. Lukaku is second in scoring, although he was having a little trouble starting out in this particular match today. But as the match went on, he did get a little better. I think they're a difficult side because they can bring so much at you, and they are pretty good defensively. They're not the best defensive team. I think that is really reserved for Uruguay at this point, but and Brazil. But I think Belgium is actually a decent defensive side, and they're not going to be a tough out for Brazil. Although you could easily argue that looking at this side of the bracket versus with what's left on the other side, we've got Russia, Croatia, and then the matches tomorrow, Sweden, Switzerland, and Colombia, England. Of those four teams, two of those will be moving on. You really almost feel like looking at this side of the bracket, Rob, Roberto, and saying that the champion will come from this side, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I just
absolutely.
I feel like that. Robbie and Napoon, do you agree? Do you feel like the champion is on this side of the bracket, this Uruguay, France, Brazil, Belgium side, or do you think the other teams on the other side have a shot at it? Napoon, I'll give that to you first.
Yeah, I mean, based on form, you'll have to say it's got to be one of those teams, right? Mm. But the World Cup is incredibly unpredictable. And if you believe the English press, this is, it's coming home, quote unquote. and I'll say Croatia is quietly brilliant. I know they didn't have the best game in the round of in the previous round. But I think with Rakitic, Modric, those two midfielders, I cannot say enough about how efficient and how dominant that team can be. So I'd say, yes, it's very likely it comes from the France, Brazil, Uruguay side of the bracket, but don't write off England. You can write off England, but don't write off Croatia.
Robbie, do you agree with him?
I think in terms of technical quality, you'd have to look at the Brazil, France, Belgium, Uruguay side of the bracket. With that said, with that in mind, I think the biggest mistake you can make is looking ahead to the final before you've even got past your quarterfinal opponent. So I think, yeah, you mean it's an old cliche, but it still rings true today. I think you really have to take it one game at a time. And Brazil have to look at getting past past Belgium. And you highlighted Uruguay there as an extremely solid defensive unit. They are. They've been in excellent form. I think they've won seven games in a row, and they've kept nine clean sheets in their last 15 games. But Brazil as well, as you rightly said, have been excellent. Since Chich has taken over, their defensive organisation has been second to none. I think they've conceded seven goals in 24 games, which is just an incredible record. So those two, when they've built that solid foundation, it makes the job of the strikers, the midfielders and the forward players much, much easier.
Agreed. So, gentlemen, I want to close out with one more question tonight, and this is one that I thought about earlier. After this particular Brazil-Mexico matchup, and I'm gonna give it to you first, Robbie, because I know when we talked about this in the pre-show, you pretty much had this answer nailed, and it is. I'm sure we've all made predictions on this World Cup, and obviously many of them, if you filled out a bracket, you've probably burned it in a fireplace already. But but at this point, it's been such a tournament of surprises. If there is one prediction that you made prior to this tournament starting that you'd like to change, basically you get a mulligan on one prediction, what prediction would that be? So, Robbie,
well, we're running the risk of throwing my journalism career down the pan. I said that Sampaoli had the ability to take Argentina all the way.
That's a good one. Yeah, proven that. Have they sacked him yet? I think they may have today.
I think it looks like it could happen at any moment now. I'm gonna say in my defense that I mean Sampaoli, it to some extent was in the wrong place at the wrong time. I mean the Argentinian Football Association's problems. Go so deep you could write an entire encyclopedia on them. Okay. But after watching him with Universidad de Chile and the Chilean national side here in South America, I thought he was the man who could dig them out of a hole. Quite clearly, it didn't work out like that, and they've gone home early. So yeah, that was my prediction that I'd take back.
Now, Napoon, how about you? What predictions did you make that you thought to yourself, boy, I wish I had that one back?
I think Sampaoli is a good shout, but mine was I predicted a Germany-France final. So at least 50% of that is 100% inaccurate.
Roberto and I had Brazil-Germany, so we're in that same boat with you.
All right.
Mr. Rojas, one prediction. Now, you and I, we did, it was like, I think the first show in about 3.5 years that we did not have a guest. That you, yep. You and I just did, me and you, we went through every bracket, every group, we picked every team, we picked golden ball, we picked golden boot, golden glove, we picked a winner.
And boy, how we failed.
Not yet. Brazil's still alive. We're still okay. But but if there's one prediction that we made on that night, what would you have taken back?
The final. I still think Brazil are going to the final, and I still think they win it. But I will take Germany out of this, and I am actually going to put, you know, a team that, you know, is getting a bit under the water. But for some reason, I just have this weird feeling they're going to do something about it. And it's just they have the talent to do so, and I'm probably going to be wrong given the results that happen tomorrow. But I pick Brazil and Colombia in the final.
Wow. So you're actually going to take your mulligan and try to correct an injustice.
Yes.
Wow. You know, and it was funny because as we were talking about, and Nipun, you're talking about, you know, the World Cup's coming home and all the tweets and all that stuff. I was thinking to myself, you guys got to get by Colombia. Good luck. You know, especially with a healthy James and the top goal scorer of Yerry Mina, which has been amazing to me. But it's been astounding. For me, Rob, Roberto, and gentlemen, there was one prediction that I made. And it was the golden boot prediction that we made on the show that night. Because, Rob, you and I actually picked the same person to take the goal-scoring trophy title.
I know who it is.
Yeah.
Fellaini.
What's that? Yeah, sure it was. Well, no, he was going to have best hair. You know, Neymar tried to take that from him at the beginning of the tournament, saw his ways and cut it. But, no, Rob and I both predicted that Gabriel Jesus would walk away with the golden boot in this one. And after 4 matches, he still has not scored a goal, which has been frustrating for me. I thought for sure, you know, and Rob, we made that prediction based on the fact that we thought we were going to see a deep run out of Brazil, and we have so far. But the fact that he hasn't scored one goal is amazing. I don't know that I want to re-predict. I don't think it's going to be Harry Kane for the similar reasons that, Rob, you think, you think England won't move on past Colombia. I don't know that they can. And also, Harry Kane, for me, although he is leading all goal scorers right now in the golden boot race, has really been fortunate. He was on the back door for that first goal with the header. He scored 2 penalty kicks, right? And one of the goals, I think it was one of the goals against Panama, was really a deflection off of the back of his foot, if you remember. So
I remember that one.
Yeah, so for all the good that Harry Kane is, and again, I've put him into my top 5 strikers in the world list. I think he's there finally. I don't see him scoring a goal, and I don't know that they're going to last long enough. I don't think they get to the final. I think if Colombia does not beat them tomorrow, I don't think they get past Croatia. I think Croatia is going to be that team. And let's be honest, Sweden and Switzerland. Sweden's only knocked out giants. Since they started this process, they knocked out the Dutch, they knocked out the Italians, they've now knocked out the Germans, they've had a hand in knocking out the Germans. I mean, all they're doing is just knocking out the Giants. And I think that if Sweden get past Switzerland tomorrow and they do face England, I don't think England beats them. And I think Sweden moves on to that that semifinal, which would be crazy. But I just don't see it happening because Sweden, you know, for everything that Japan did today, and I'm surprised that they gave it away so late to Belgium, Sweden is another tactically solid team. They play as a wonderful, wonderful unit. We've seen them do it time and time again so far this tournament. And for me, that's the kind of team that goes far as long as they stay within their discipline. Just thinking back on this tournament, even Uruguay, we saw great discipline out of their defense against Cristiano Ronaldo in Portugal. We've seen these teams play so technically sound, and it's gotten them places. And I think a team like Sweden can really cause trouble because they're so technically sound. So I feel like England has such a they saw their road after losing to Belgium in that last group stage match and thought to themselves, oh, we're on the easy side of the bracket. No, this is not an easy side of the bracket. This is actually a very difficult side of the bracket, but we'll have to see what happens. So Gentlemen, you know, with everything wrapped up on the docket, I'd like to play our closing music and call it a night. And so, you know, without further ado, let me go ahead and get that started. While this is playing in the background, Robbie and Nipun, I'm going to go to you first, Robbie, and let us know what you've got coming up career-wise.
Sorry, what I've got coming up on...
What's coming up for you in the future here as a journalist?
Immediate plans, just keep writing and podding and broadcasting on the World Cup. And then when the World Cup's finished, I'll be focused on the Brazilian National League season, which gets underway on the Wednesday after the World Cup final. And of course, the Copa Libertadores, which is the South American equivalent of the UEFA Champions League.
Yep, definitely. Rob and I are always watching that. So, Nipun, how about you? What's going on for you coming up in the future?
Yeah, focusing on the World Cup next couple of weeks, and then back to talking about USL and NPSL and PDL and a little bit of MLS and all the fun things about American soccer. And, of course, the first love of my life, Manchester United.
There you go. And I'll be listening on SiriusXM for you, my friend. So, on behalf of our guests, that was episode 210 of Low Limit Football on the All In Sports Talk Network. I'm your host, Joe Uccello.
I'm Roberto Rojas.
Thanks for listening, everyone, and good night.